I don't mind you coming here, wasting all my time. It is a Monday downtown. It's about 4:32. Time for us to catch up on the Boston sports scene. And to do that, we turn to Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Hello there, Chad.
Hey there, Rich. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well, thanks. How's your Monday so far?
No complaints. I get the intro there from a Boston band, the Cars, so nice synergy.
Oh, yeah, that's what we're all about here, making it all into one neat package of awesomeness here. Well, gosh, a lot going on, but let's, I guess, start with the Celtics back in the Eastern Conference Final for the sixth time in 8 years. Is it wrong that I wanted the battered and beaten Knicks and not the Pacers?
You know, I wanted Indiana right up until Brunson got hurt. And then who are the five that Tibbs is going to be able to put out there if it is the Knicks against the Celtics? I've never seen a team really crumble the way they did because of injuries, and obviously there's some overuse there with his refusal to use the bench with the Knicks, but I just didn't want to deal with all that New York Boston stuff, even though probably better for us content wise but yeah, Indiana's a tough matchup. I mean, they run, they can shoot, they're athletic. That Siakam was a really great pickup for them. Haliburton looks like himself again here, especially the last couple games of that series. So I don't think it's going to be easy for the Celtics. I think they get through it and it doesn't go seven games, but there's going to be nights where you're pretty frustrated when Indiana's hitting everything in sight and the Celtics are having a hard time matching them. There'll be a couple of games like that.
Yeah, and they've certainly played pretty well against the Celtics this year. But I guess in the big picture, if you're going to win any NBA championship, at least one of the series ought to be a bit of a challenge for you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to complain about them having a quote-unquote easy path, which they have, because you need things to line up for you in a certain way when you're pursuing a championship. In the end, you look at it and you say, things went right for us. You need that to happen to get a title. There's just so many things that can go wrong along the way. It's such a long journey from the start of the playoffs to the finals, and to have an easy path, I mean, that's nothing they should be ashamed of. But it does get a little tougher here, and I think that's a good thing because we've all got our questions about end-of-game execution with this team and what they'll do when they're down a point with 14 seconds left and they're bringing the ball up the court, and how that's all going to work out. They just haven't been challenged a lot in that regard. So I think they probably will in at least a couple of games in this series, and it'll probably be good for them as hopefully and presumably they move on to the NBA Finals after this.
Do you think they need Porzingis to win this series?
To win this series, to win it easily, yes. To win it, probably no. My hunch is that they ease him back in, maybe game three for 15 minutes, 10-15 minutes. I mean, it's interesting because Indiana runs. He's going to have to be ready to go. And those calf injuries, they can recur. They can turn into something worse, as we saw with Kevin Garnett back when he was in Golden State. And you want to make sure he's okay and ready to go. And I'm traveling with them in the playoffs, and I was at shoot around in Indiana last week when Porzingis was out warming up. And if you were watching him warm up during the morning, you'd think that guy's perfectly healthy. So I think he's probably in a little bit better condition with the leg than we realize, but they're going to be super cautious with it, and they should, because you just don't want it to turn into something where you lose him again. So I think we see him a couple of games into this series, and after shaking the rust off a little bit, I think he'll look like himself pretty quickly.
Chad Finn with us here on Downtown. Another disappointing end to the season for the Boston Bruins. One black bear certainly standing tall, nobody better than Jeremy Swayman in the postseason. But what about Jim Montgomery? Is this 2 years in a row with a fairly early exit? Could this be the end for him in Boston?
Oh, my buddy Kevin Paul DuPont's driving that.
I saw that, yeah.
He's one of my favorite colleagues, but his column the day after was like, is Montgomery out? Or is he going to go? And I mean, there's things you can certainly say that make you think, you know, a change could happen. It's a 7 too many men on the ice penalty playoff record for any team. Mm. And they didn't even, you know, not in the finals, the conference finals, Stanley Cup finals, they got knocked out. So that's bad, and that reflects on the coach. But, yeah, I think they overachieved this year in the regular season. When you look at Bergeron retiring, Krejci retiring, a lot, you know, guys, they spent a lot of money to bring in last year to reinforce the team that you know, got knocked out in the first round, the Orlovs and Bertuzzi's and guys like that you lost. Sweeney did a nice job piecing it together this year, but Jimmy did a really good job coaching the team in the regular season. And I think had they lost in that game 7 in the first round to Toronto, I would have put it at 50-50 that he was back. I think getting through that series and even with the hiccups and frustrating things against Florida, bottom line, I think Neely and Sweeney look at is that the Bruins lost to a better team. Florida's a better team than they are, and I think that probably means Jimmy gets a third year here.
So I discovered something yesterday. It's always good to learn something new. I found out I get the Roku TV channel, so I was able to watch the Red Sox game yesterday. I actually enjoyed the broadcast with Will Middlebrooks on there with the St. Louis broadcaster.
Yeah, nice to see Will getting chances. One of the really good guys the Red Sox have had on their team, and well, spent, you know, it was over a decade now since he was a rookie. I still think of him as a young guy, but he came up in 12 and was part of that 13 team, and you know, was one of the people who really gave a lot to Boston after the marathon bombing, and there was a young guy here. So nice to see him having success and getting that chance. And I think he's good on the Red Sox broadcast too, the Nesson broadcast, as someone who's got a self-deprecating, genuine sense of humor and is just getting better at it. I really like Lou Maloney as an analyst, and I think Will Middlebrooks is going to be a really good one. I just wish they would narrow that pool down a little bit of guys that they use. And you know, we could, I don't know if they'll ever go back to a situation like we had with Jerry for all those years with Remy, where it's just the one guy. And then, you know, eventually Eck became part of that too, but just too many voices. I think if you were going to have one guy down the road, Will would be a very, very good choice eventually to be the main guy, the number one guy.
And it's not a very good team, but I, for some reason, I'm enjoying watching them a lot this year. And I think it's the chance to see the development of some of those young guys. Now, hopefully down the road, they'll get some money out from the couch cushions and bring in a couple of nice pricey veterans to go with them. But watching guys like Raffaello, Abreu, and others, the advancement that we've seen from people like Cutter Crawford and Tanner Houck, they're fun for a middle-of-the-road team.
Yeah, I think they probably stay under 500 here. They're 23 and 24 now, and they kind of have to come back to earth a little bit with the pitching. It's just been so ridiculously good, and it was supposed to be the weakness of the team. Definitely reflects on the job Andrew Bailey's done and Craig Breslow implementing the new pitching program. Probably doesn't reflect well on people who were in charge of the pitching in recent years. But that they'll come back to earth a little bit there. Hopefully they make it up by hitting better than they have been. You know, it's got one guy in double figures with home runs, O'Neill, and you know, some guys have had it going, but there are also a lot of weak spots in the lineup. I thought they were going to score runs, and those injuries decimated them. Losing Cassis decimated them. Grissom hasn't done anything since he's been back, but since he's gotten his opportunity, I had high hopes for him, but now this looks like a team that's going to be right around 500, maybe a couple of games under 500, but at least with this group, you feel pretty good about the direction they're headed compared to the last Heim Bloom year or two, where just felt like there was no real strategy other than wait for the guys to arrive from the farm system, and almost to the point where the major league roster felt neglected.
And if Cora goes, and it sure seems like he's headed in that direction, do you think they would stay in-house and give the job to somebody like Jason Varitek?
That would make all the sense in the world. And I've never been someone who thought, you know, the perception with Varitek was he was like going to go straight from catching for the Red Sox to the dugout. And, you know, be the next Earl Weaver or whatever. And I've kind of always felt like you'd want somebody to get some experience, but he's got a different kind of experience. He's like the coordinator of the pitching game right now. He has real responsibility with the Red Sox, real responsibility in developing their young catchers. Connor Wong, we'll talk all day about how Veritek has helped him out. And, yeah, I think he would make a ton of sense as Cora's successor if Cora does move on. And, you know, to me, certainly, just like you said, it seems like he's perfectly comfortable with this being his last year here.
I see a new morning sports show coming to the Boston airwaves, and if it goes well, I want a little cut because they're grabbing a lot of downtown guests. Michael Hurley, Charlotte Wilder, Mike Giardi. I feel like I have some stake in this operation.
Yeah, he got all of his favorites and a bunch of your favorites as well, I guess. I was actually down there this morning. I went down to the studio to check it out and kind of just get the lay of the land, see what it was all about. And he had Ted Johnson on with him and Hurley. Felt a lot like Hutcher and Rich, you know, because those co-hosts, and Hurley's his daily co-host. And Charlotte's part of the rotation, and Ted Johnson will be part of that rotation, Giardi. But felt a lot like that because those guys had all been on Hutcher and Rich, and Rich was there. But I think it's going to be what people expect from the show is probably what it's going to ultimately be. Everybody knows Rich Sherlock and his style and the kind of stuff he likes and doesn't like. So was fairly predictable to me in a good way.
Yeah, I mean, Michael Hurley's great. We love him when he comes on here. He's a funny guy.
Yeah.
Knows everything. So good. I hope it works out down there. Competition's good for everybody, right?
Well, it's more stuff to keep track of for me. So technically, I mean, Rich said it's going to be a 70% sports show, and it's on a rock radio station. So as far as I'm concerned, we've got three sports morning shows down there now.
All right. There you go. More for Chad to do. That's good. Chad, always a pleasure to talk with you, my friend. Thanks so much for being with us, and we'll catch up with you another week or two.
All right, Rich. Good talking to you.
All right. Thanks, Chad. Chad Finn, Boston Globe, here on a Monday downtown. It is 4:46.